This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, members of the Conservative House Freedom Caucus are eyeing the temporary must-pass funding bill, known as the Continuing Resolution, or CR, as a means to stop the resettlement of poorly vetted Syrian refugees here in the U.S. Oklahoma Congressman Jim Bridenstine is here to explain. And yesterday, 88 retired military generals and admirals issued a statement regarding Donald Trump and his bid for president. What did the retired flag officer say? One of them, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, is here with the answer. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's topics and our guest. You can also find out information about the Values Voter Summit, which starts this Friday. Still time to get here and be a part of it. Let me just give you some of the speakers that we're going to have. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, George Barna, Gary Bauer, David and Jason Benham. Dr. Bill Bennett will be the recipient this year of the FRC Leadership Award. That'll be on Saturday night at our gala. Governor Matt Bevin, we've got Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, Ryan Bomberger, of course, General Boykin. My next guest, Congressman Jim Bridenstine, will be here. Kirk Cameron, Senator Tom Cotton, Dr. Dobson, Governor Doug Ducey, Congressman John Fleming, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, our good friend Congressman Louis Gohmert, and the list goes on and on. Congressman Jim Jordan will be here as well. Senator James Lankford, who I was visiting with earlier today on the Hill. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, Governor Mike Pence, Reince Priebus, Phil Robertson, Duck Dynasty, Senator Rick Santorum, Senator Tim Scott, Todd Starnes of Fox News, and John Voight will be here as well, as will Donald Trump. So great lineup for this year's Values Voter Summit here in Washington, D.C. starts on Friday. You can be a part of it. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. All right, if you're on Twitter, you can keep up with us, at T. Perkins. That's my handle. All right, a little bit later, we're going to go to the phone lines. But first, the Obama administration is accelerating their resettlement of Syrian refugees, despite concerns from Congress that the refugees, 98% of whom are Sunni Muslim, are not being properly vetted. Now, the Obama administration has disregarded a warning from their own FBI director, James Comey, that the government cannot properly vet the Syrian refugees hoping to enter this country. Now, the proportion of Christians among those resettled continues to land below half of 1%. Join me now to highlight the Syrian refugee crisis and what conservative members of Congress are planning to do. Is a member of the House Freedom Caucus. He represents the 1st Congressional District of the Sooner State, Congressman Jim Bridenstine. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's always good to be here.
Well, good to hear from you, Congressman. You have been pretty vocal about this issue as a Navy veteran, concerned about the issue of national security and what these poorly vetted refugees could mean to national security. How committed is the Freedom Caucus to slowing this process down?
Well, I think the Freedom Caucus is very committed. I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes to most members of Congress on the Republican side, for sure, want to make sure that the folks that are actually coming here are properly vetted. As you mentioned, James Comey testified before Congress, and he explicitly said that there's not a good process to vet these folks, primarily because they're not documented. They don't have any papers. We don't know where they're from. We don't know what their associations are. It's very difficult to vet somebody who really we don't have any background on. So all that being said, what we're up against now, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, is the government shutdown that looms at the end of September unless we pass some spending bills. Well, normally the way this works is we do a series of appropriation bills. There are 12 of them, and I've talked about this on your show before. And we do those bills one at a time. And in those bills, that's where we have the opportunity to represent our constituents. We can defund things. We can fund things that we think are appropriate. We can move money around. We have the ability to represent our constituents, and we have the ability to to actually put limitations on the executive branch using the power of the purse, which is enshrined in the Constitution. So that is why we should normally, that's why we do 12 appropriation bills in regular order, representing our constituents in an open amendment process. As everybody knows, this whole system gets shut down every year. I'm now in my fourth year in Congress, and it was going on before I got here. Every year, Harry Reid shuts down the process in the Senate. He won't pass any bills, zero. So we're faced with yet another government shutdown. Somehow they always call it a Republican shutdown. But now, even though we're the only ones that have done anything to fund the government, but this year, with this government shutdown looming, we're going to do a massive CR where they roll all 12 bills into one massive spending package, and you say, we're going to fund next year exactly as we funded last year. You take off the table the power of the purse. You take off the table my representation of my constituents. You either fund everything or the whole government shuts down. Those are your two options. And if you fund everything, guess what? You're funding, as you correctly identified, the Syrian refugee resettlement program, which the FBI director has said we don't have the tools necessary to properly vet the Syrian refugees that are coming here. This is why the process matters. We have a breakdown in the process here. And when we as Republicans step out and vote for CR, we're enabling the president to advance his agenda. I want to be really clear about the Syrian refugee resettlement program. This is an immigration program. Make no mistake. This is not; these are not temporary refugees that are going to eventually go home. By refugee status, you get a green card in a year, and in 5 years, you're going to have your United States citizenship. This is another tool, and the president. This is not unique. The president uses refugee status regularly to increase immigration in ways that he deems as appropriate. So, and whether or not you agree with the program or not, the bottom line is we have a constitution. And the Constitution says that Congress has the authority to create an uniform rule of naturalization. The president doesn't get to do this by himself. So in my estimation, this is an area where Congress needs to assert its constitutional role of having the power of the purse and say, look, we're going to defund this particular program, or we're going to fund a program that guarantees that there is a certification process so we know whoever comes here is not going to be hostile to the United States, which right now is seemingly lacking. So this is an important point. At the end of this month, we're all going to step out and vote up or down on a massive continuing resolution. And, Tony, this is the other thing that is important for your audience to understand, and I know they do because they listen to this program. When we fund a CR, you're not just funding the Syrian refugee resettlement program. You're funding Planned Parenthood,
right.
You're funding Obamacare, you're funding all of the EPA rules and regulations that everybody is understanding now is damaging the American economy, especially the economy in my state of Oklahoma, and I know your state of Louisiana. You talk about we're funding sanctuary cities. We're funding a whole host of things that are antithetical to the people that are listening to this show right now. And we're doing it because we get an up or down vote. You either fund the entire federal government or the entire federal government shuts down. And when we do this, the president has all the power.
Right.
The president can issue any executive order that he wants and nothing can be done about it. The president can use the rules and the regulations of the bureaucracies to enforce his liberal agenda and nothing will be done about it. This is the fundamental flaw in doing CRs. And quite frankly, what's even worse about this CR, we did the same thing last year. They're saying this CR is going to expire on December 9th. So it's going to be literally for not even 2.5 months. Why would we set up a CR that expires in the middle of a lame duck where members of Congress aren't coming back, the President of the United States isn't coming back? I'll tell you why. Because they're going to do some kind of budget agreement where they're going to increase spending on all 12 of those appropriation bills, and then they're going to do some massive omnibus where they increase spending. They did it last year. Last year it expired on December 11th. This year it's expiring on December 9th. And here's the deal. when that happens, we as members of Congress get an up or down vote, and that vote is going to say, you're either going to fund the entire federal government, including the new $80 billion or whatever the number is this year. Last year it was $80 billion. You're either going to fund all of that, or you're going to vote to shut down the government right before government employees get their last paycheck before Christmas. In other words, they're saying, we dare you to vote no, because it'll be damaging for your reelection prospect.
Well,
you see the process here that is so broken and so damaged, and we lose our representation in this process.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Congressman Jim Bridenstine, my guest, we're talking about it's called a CR, Continuing Resolution. That's how the government, when was the last time that the actual appropriations process worked and that they actually passed appropriation bills?
Okay, so this is an important point, and we hear this from people all the time. They say things like, well, the last time the appropriations process really worked was 1970, whatever. Here's the difference. Historically, we have done CRs before the Obama administration. There were, in fact, continuing resolutions before the Obama administration. But they were for one appropriation bill for a period of 2 or 3 months so that your member of Congress could come back and eventually pass an appropriation bill where you could be represented. That's the difference. What we're doing now under the Obama administration is we're doing not one appropriation bill, we're doing all 12 of them at the same time. And we're not doing it, you know, for a period of a month or two so that we can represent you. We're doing it for an entire year, my first couple of years in Congress, and now we're doing it to where it is even worse, it expires in a lame duck, so then they can come back and increase federal spending, which is what they did to us last year. And
but the point,
I want to be clear, Tony, this is not Republicans against Democrats. That's not what this is. This is collusion. Both parties are doing this. Both parties are doing this, and it needs to stop. And there can be, we can't make any more excuses. We can't apologize for it. Republicans need to say, no, Harry Reid, you don't get your way this year. We're not going to have a CR that expires in December, so you can turn around and not only fund Planned Parenthood and fund the Syrian refugee resettlement program and fund Obamacare, which also does abortion, and fund sanctuary cities and fund the EPA regulations. We're not going to do all that. But on top of it, the reason it expires on December 9th is because I guarantee you they're planning to spend more money. The other reason is this. They want to put the Trans-Pacific Partnership on top of it, which I think is probably probably more realistic this year. You've already heard. You've got Hillary Clinton that doesn't want to do Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Right.
You've got Donald Trump that doesn't want to do Trans-Pacific Partnership.
They're going to load it up like a Christmas tree because they won't be accountable.
That's right. They got to get it done before the next president gets sworn in. That's
and they
why
won't
they're
be
having
coming
this,
back.
This CR expire in December, and that's the problem.
Jim, we're up against the break. I want to thank you for joining us. And as always, you're a straight shooter. You call it
thank
like you,
you
see
thank
it.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks so much for being with us, Congressman Jim Bridenstine of Oklahoma. Look, I'm going to talk more about this a little bit later because you could do something about this. There's a coalition of conservative groups that have said no lame duck session of Congress. And you need to start weighing in with your member of Congress and saying, hey, no lame duck. All right? Okay, when we come back, 88 retired flag officers released a letter yesterday about Donald Trump. What did it say? We'll talk about it with General Boykin next.
Should our daughters and mothers be forced to serve in the military through selective service in a time of war? Should they be required to serve in units with men in primal conditions where privacy and personal hygiene are by nature out in the open, and where they are forced together in close proximity for long periods? The American military is about preparing for, fighting, and winning wars and performing specific operations against threats to the security of our country and vital national interests, period. Anything that distracts from the achievement of these purposes should be jettisoned. This includes placing women into special operations forces or forward-based infantry positions and including them in the selective service. For more information on the common sense needs of our men and women in uniform, visit frc.org/womeninthedraft. That's frc.org/womeninthedraft.
Forget watching the presidential race. Come to Washington, D.C. and experience it. From September 9th through 11th, Donald Trump and other conservatives will be teaming up with FRC Action and thousands of Americans to bring real change to Washington. You can too. You'll be hearing from leading voices like Dr. James Dobson, John Voight, Bill Bennett, Phil Robertson, Alan West, Oliver North, FRC President Tony Perkins, and many more. If you're frustrated by how Washington's spending your money and undermining your values, this is the place to be. You'll learn how to transform your state on issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, judges, and radical Islam. Registration is only $119 for adults, and scholarships are available for students. The November elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. Tickets are going fast, so log on to valuesvotersummit.org today. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian health care sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable health care for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your health care. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical health care. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Coming up on Friday, the beginning of the Values Voter Summit. Look, if you can get here, I would highly recommend you do. There's still room, not a whole lot of room, but there's still room. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow links over. We'll have on Friday, Donald Trump will be here. On Saturday, we'll have Governor Mike Pence, the VP nominee, and a whole list of folks, members of Congress, other conservative leaders. Saturday night, as I mentioned earlier, Dr. Bill Bennett, the recipient of this year's Leadership Award. Just a lot of folks. Phil Robertson, he's going to be with us on Friday night as well of Duck Dynasty. And my next guest will be here with us as well, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. As we discussed yesterday, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are in a neck-and-neck race for the White House. Polling basically has them tied. And there's several voting segments of the population that will potentially play a deciding role in this election. We've talked about it. I think social conservative, evangelical voters, a key voting block. Another one of those key voting blocks is that of military veterans. Yesterday, 88 retired military generals and admirals released a letter pertaining to Donald Trump and his candidacy. What did the letter say? Well, joining me with the answer is one of the men who signed it, FRC's Executive Vice President and founding member of the Army's Delta Force, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. I'm so glad to be with you today.
Well, General, what did the letter say yesterday? Tell our listeners what you and your fellow retired general flag officers had to say.
Yeah, it was a relatively short letter, actually. It was an open letter. And what we tried to do in this letter was point out the fact that our military readiness is in a steep decline. It has been since the Obama administration took over. And that the security of America is at stake, and that we just simply do not believe that we can withstand 4 years of a second Clinton administration, and that we believe that Trump is a much better choice in terms of the restoration of military readiness than Hillary Clinton.
So these retired military officers have come out in support of Donald Trump because of their concern of the current state of affairs in our military, how it's been hollowed out by this administration, but more importantly, where a Clinton administration may take the military in terms of even further destabilizing our military force. It was interesting to watch the media response to that. They immediately began to attack some of the officers who signed the letter, including yourself.
Yeah.
My take on this, and I want to get what your thoughts are, but my take is because they realize how important of a voting bloc this is, and how not just to the military veterans, but when the military veterans, especially the leadership, speak out in this race, it's going to influence a lot of others, considering how vulnerable we are as a nation today. And I have to say, I don't think the left liked the fact that these military leaders have come out for Trump.
No, they don't like that at all. In fact, they fear it. These were all flag officers, generals or admirals of all the services. And I think that they see that as a powerful voice in terms of the national security. And, you know, first of all, this was not something that we had a great deal of collaboration on. We started a petition, we sent it around, said, if you're willing to sign on with us and you feel the way we do, then please sign on. And 88 people signed on to it. So, you know, it was not a difficult thing to do. But secondly, it's important to remember that as a group, we have committed our professional lives to national security,
right,
and to the readiness of our military. And I think when we speak out, that really frightens the media, it frightens the Clinton campaign, it frightens the left in general, who are very concerned that our voice may have an impact, and that impact would be that we would encourage a good group of the voter bloc to support Donald Trump.
Yeah, but as I mentioned, I think it goes beyond that, because one of the major issues, I think, in this election is national security, the threat of terrorism, and our military and its ability to protect us as a nation. I think more and more Americans, given the fact we've had attacks on our own soil, are considering this when they go into the to the voting booth. But
Tony, and I think there's a couple of things. One is the military readiness issue, and our military's been devastated. And I just talked to a recruiter out in Oklahoma last weekend, who was telling me we're not going to make our recruiting goals for this year. Young men and women are just not signing up, and when we try to talk to them, they just won't do it. And that's because they, as well as the parents across the country, are seeing what our military has become. The second thing, though, is remember that Hillary Clinton was the architect of the war in Libya. That was her plan, to go in and not only overthrow and ultimately kill Muammar Gaddafi, but to put arms and equipment and support in the hands of jihadists. And that's exactly what we got. And then we got those arms back in Benghazi on the 11th of September, 2012. We don't want to have a commander-in-chief that sends our military off to war unless you can demonstrate that it's in the national security interest of America or our allies. And that's exactly what occurred at her design, I might add.
Well, clearly the military is, and a military veteran's important voting bloc, but as you pointed out, I think it's an influential voting bloc that others will pay attention to. We're up against a break. One final question for you, General. Any Marines sign on to the letter?
Yeah, unfortunately. What we had to do is give them a crayon so they could sign the thing on their computer. But yes, we had some Marines in there.
All right. Just checking. One, make sure you weren't discriminating. All right?
No,
I'll watch you.
We added them.
Okay.
It was difficult, but most of them don't have computers anyhow.
All right. I'll see you later there, General. Thanks so much for joining us. My favorite Army general, General Jerry Boykin there. I do think that this is going to be an election where national security is going to play a major factor. In the next 60 days, who knows what may happen that will bring this to the forefront even more. We're going to talk about that. I want to talk about this continuing resolution, Syrian refugees. We're going to talk about that, and then we're going to go to the phone lines, and I want to talk to you. here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're back with a lot more after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
It looks like oil futures are climbing a bit. Traders are looking ahead at U.S. oil inventories coming out later on in the week. And they're also looking at production developments, or I should say the lack thereof, of any future developments or growth in production leading up to a very informal, key word there is informal, meeting of major oil producing countries later on this month. It also comes at a time when Iran has indicated that they see a rebalancing of oil in the fourth quarter. Iran. Yes, traders are looking at Iran's assessment for the oil sector. I mean, that in and of itself is pretty amazing, but this is a very small country that has very little impact on oil production or growth around the globe, but desperate for any kind of news about anything that could look like production is slowing down. They, of course, are hanging on even Iran's assessment of rebalancing. So oil right now is climbing in reference to some assumptions and things that are coming out from producing nations talking about production freezes. If they freeze, keep in mind, they will likely freeze at record levels of production. So that is going to have very little impact on the increase of inventories due to a weak demand.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, tonyperkins.com. Let me remind you folks that this program is brought to you by the Family Research Council, and the Family Research Council is solely supported by families and individuals like you out there all across the nation who care about faith, family, and freedom, and want to not only defend those things, but to advance those core principles that have made America great, faith, family, and freedom. And if you'd like to partner with us and be a part of Washington Watch and the Family Research Council, go to tonyperkins.com and find out how you can be a partner with us in making sure that this program continues. Also, I'll remind you once again, the Values Voter Summit begins this Friday, Saturday, and wraps up Sunday. In fact, Chaplain Wes Motter, who's been on this program before. He, in fact, the general was out in California this week for his retirement ceremony. Wes Motter, retired Navy chaplain. He's going to be speaking Sunday morning, September the 11th. Yes, the 15th anniversary of 9/11. He is going to be the Sunday morning speaker at Values Voter Summit and many, many other speakers. Find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right. I want to go back to this issue with the Syrian refugees. Two issues really wrapped up in this one, the continuing resolution, which we talked about, the fact that Congress has basically abdicated their role as being the having the power of the purse. Because as Congressman Bridenstine pointed out, by allowing these CRs, which have been done during the entire tenure of Barack Obama, it's lumping everything together, and it's just saying yes or no. The Congress has no ability to influence the policy through how the money is spent, and the Democrats are willing to fight for these things, and the Republicans are not. I mean, there is, as I mentioned, there is a coalition of over, I don't know what the number is now. This morning it was about 125 conservative organizations and individuals of influence that have signed a letter stating, calling on Congress, rather, the Republicans not to have a lame duck session. Because Jim is exactly right. What's going to happen? They're going to do this short-term CR. It'll expire in December. They'll come back into a lame duck session where two things are at work. One is they do this a lot. It's in December, right before Christmas. They'll drag it out and back it up until members will do whatever they need to do just to vote so they can go home. That's one factor. But in a lame duck like this, what's even worse, and we've seen some really bad stuff in these lame duck sessions, like the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and other things, is that there's no accountability. Because some of these members will not be coming back. They will have been defeated, or they will not have run again, they did not run again for office, and so they're not returning. And so there's no accountability, and they'll just barter away their vote, trade it, maybe for, depending on who won the election, maybe a post in the administration, any number of things. So there's just it's a poor way to do government. Number one, the CRs are a poor way, but then doing these in a lame duck only magnifies the problem. So you need to have a phone number to call your member of Congress, and I'm going to provide that phone number. That number is 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. That's the congressional switchboard, the House, the Congress, the switchboard to Congress. Call, you can talk to either your senator or your congressman. If you don't know who they are, just give them your zip code and they will tell you who your member of Congress is, and they can also connect you with that member of Congress. They can also connect you with your two senators. And what I would tell my congressman is a bad idea to have a lame duck session of Congress. You know, go ahead, if you're going to do government by CR, by continuing resolution, go ahead and do a long-term one. Do it a year, if that's the way you're going to do it, because they are not going to come back in a lame duck session of Congress and pass appropriation bills like some have been saying. It's not going to happen. They're going to do a hastily put together CR that probably has all kinds of bad stuff in it, and they're going to force them to vote for it, and it's just going to be more bad government. It's the way it works. All right, and back to the Syrian refugee. I know we're almost up against another break, but on the Syrian refugees, all right, the president's pushing it, accelerating it to get 10,000 in by the end of September, 10,000 Syrian refugees. And here's the deal. So far, the 6,726 have been admitted into the U.S. in this fiscal year. You know how many of them are Christians, the persecuted minorities there in Syria? 23. See, this was about giving refuge to the persecuted minorities. Well, 10 Yazidis, one of no religion, and one of other religion, and as I mentioned, 23 Christians. The rest have all been Muslim. All right. This is a bad program, and they're not vetted. They're not vetting them. Look what's happened in France. Look what's happened here. How much more has to happen before we get serious about our own security? That's why I believe this is going to be a major issue in the election, as it should be. As it should be. All right, when we come back, we're going to take your phone calls, but I still got another topic I want to talk about. Chuck Schumer, who is hoping to be the majority leader of the Senate if the Democrats capture the Senate. You'll want to hear what he had to say about the court. These guys don't hold back. They believe in what they say. Maybe wrong, but they still believe it. We're going to talk about that and take your phone calls here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're back with more after this.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Wesley Biblical Seminary provides a solid foundation based upon the inerrancy of the Bible and the call to holy living. Online or at our Jackson, Mississippi or Greenwood, Indiana campuses, our academically rigorous learning community will add incredible value to your Christian experience. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning ignite with passion for Christ. WBS.edu.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
You are listening to Washington Watch. Welcome back. Website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, Chuck Schumer today was talking to a policy conference hosted by the Reverend Al Sharpton. It's the National Action Network. Now, Chuck Schumer, who is a senator from New York, understands what's really important in this presidential election and what's at stake. And I'm hoping, folks, that you're listening here, especially those of you who maybe you're thinking to sit this election out, because this is what happens if you set this election out. Maybe don't vote. Maybe don't show up to vote in a Senate race or presidential race. Here's what Schumer said. Quote, "My number one goal, should I become majority leader with your help, is to get a progressive Supreme Court. A progressive majority on the Supreme Court is an imperative. And if I become majority leader, I will make it happen," Schumer said. "I will make it happen." You know what? I believe him. You see, the Democrats, they fight for what they believe in. And they try to do it. I mean, with their minority in the Senate, they're blocking pretty much everything. Republicans never did that when they were in the minority. They always went along and set up all the bad stuff. But here's what happens. If you don't vote, and let's say Hillary Clinton were to be elected president, I'm just saying, I mean, that's just a hypothetical there, but if you didn't vote and the a liberal candidate won who appointed liberal justices to the Supreme Court, or progressive, to use the term that they like, it's a sanitized version of liberal, what does a progressive Supreme Court look like? Well, I can't imagine it looking much different than what we have now, but they want it to be. I mean, consider what the court has done to this country in the last 43 years. Roe v. Wade, abortion on demand, remove the Ten Commandments from schools, from courthouses in some cases, redefined marriage. And they want a more progressive Supreme Court? My gosh, It's just too bad Republicans don't feel as strongly about a conservative court that they would be willing to fight for it. But if you have a liberal president who nominates progressive justices, and you have conservatives that don't show up to vote, and therefore progressives win control, Democrats win control of the Senate, and you have a liberal president, a liberal-dominated Senate, I mean, what's to stop? There's nothing that's going to stop these quote-unquote progressives from being put on the court. See, they get it. They know what this election's about. You got to think with your head, analytically, what will be the outcome of not participating in this process. All right, 866-372-7234, 866-372-4. Twitter at T. Perkins. All right, look, we were talking about Syrian refugees. We were talking about the CR. And now we're talking about the court. And I want to know, here's what I'd like to ask you. I mean, I've talked about national security. We've talked about the court. We've talked about spending. What is your number one issue as you think about voting for president? You go into the voting booth. What is... And give me the one of the top three issues that are determining, number one, if you're going to vote, and number two, how you'll vote. What issues are? It could be something else, not even those things that I've mentioned, but I'd like to know of your top three motivators for you to, one, vote, and then, B, who you vote for. What are they? I'd like you to share those with us. 866-372-7234 to get in on the conversation here on this Wednesday afternoon. Just a reminder for those of you who may just be tuning in, the Values Voter Summit coming up this Friday here in Washington, D.C., and you can be a part of it. Go to TonyPerkins.com. You can still register. There's still room, and there every year there's usually some that show up at the door. That's a little risky because there might not be room. I would pre-register if I were you. There's still some room. So go to TonyPerkins.com and you can register. All right, I got some calls coming in. 866-372-7234. This is what I want to know. You know, of your top three motivating issues of will you vote, or what's gonna motivate you to vote, and then what will determine who you vote for? What are the issues? Want to know. And we're going to first go to Kansas, where Roland is on the line. Roland, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir.
All right, what's one of your top three issues?
Number one is national security.
All right, tell me why.
I was listening to a different Christian talk show today earlier, and he mentioned an additional $1.3 billion was released that we didn't know about. We knew about 400,000. If that is true, that's an awful lot of money to fund the terrorists that are threatening our security.
Yeah, you're talking about the Iran hostage trade-off.
Right.
More information
right.
coming out about how we paid them to let people go.
Correct.
Right. I agree with you. I think more and more people, depending on what happens in the next 60 days, anytime there is obviously an attack of some sort, people, you know, they automatically start thinking national security. Although I would say it's right there, it's latent, it's there at the top already because of what's happened in this country in the last year, of course, over the last 8 years. But, you know, we're laughed at internationally. And the world is becoming a much more dangerous place in the absence of strong leadership from our own military. I mean, this president hasn't been concerned about strength. He's been concerned about social experimentation in our military. Roland, thanks so much for the call. I mean, I could talk about the issue of national security all day long because I think it is absolutely critical. I mean, I have a whole host of issues. Religious freedom is there at the top. But we can't defend anything without a strong military that is not hollowed out by these radical social agendas. Of course, then religious freedom, the moral component, is having the motivation to defend something. You have to have something to defend, but you sure have to be able to defend it. All right, let's go to Alabama, where Todd is on the line. Todd, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much. The reason I'm calling in is top two motivators for me this November when I go to the polls. One is going to be the Supreme Court, or possible Supreme Court nominees. They're going to shape the nation for generations to come. If the wrong, or if a progressive gets in and assigns progressives or, you know, nominates progressives to the court, that lasts a lifetime. There is no, it's a lifetime appointment. And secondarily, being retired military, I also, national defense is right up there. The Obama administration has hollowed out the Navy, the armed forces in general, and we need to build a strong defense and get the respect that we deserve on a national front. That's pretty much all I've got for you.
Are you a Navy veteran, Todd?
Yes, sir. Navy Master Chief retired.
Well, thank you for your service, Todd, and thanks for listening and calling in. I agree with you. I think Supreme Court up there, national security. For me, the top three issues would be Supreme Court, national security, religious liberty. Not necessarily in that order. It would be, I would all pretty much, they're all intertwined in my way of thinking. But they're all critical. And Todd, thanks again for listening and for calling in. Let's go to Virginia, where Jeff is on the line. Jeff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing quite well today. Yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. And, Tony, I'm kind of in the same boat as the previous gentleman that just spoke to. For months and months, I've been kind of a, gosh, I don't know who to vote for, I won't vote type guy. But then it just hit me after listening to so many people. I have to think about who's going to be on Supreme Court
yes.
down the road. And if you think about who Hillary would put on versus who I think Donald Trump would put on, I think there's no contest. And I think if Hillary gets her chance, she'll put on another 40-year-old Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and then we will really be outnumbered.
Jeff, what you're doing, Jeff, is you're making this transition where there was an emotional detachment. There's no way to be emotionally excited, passionate about the choices before you. But as you begin to think through it, as you said, begin to look at it analytically, you can lay out the two options before you. And as you said, it's really not a choice. If you're going to have someone who's going to put, quote unquote, progressives on the court, that's going to further redefine what it means to be an American and alter the cultural and political landscape of this country, I mean, that's what we're looking at. It's absolutely what we're looking at. Jeff, thanks so much for the call and for, I think, reflecting where a lot of people are. They just, they're having to think through this. And that's what we're doing here. We're kind of helping people think through the process and what might come of the choices that we make. We got to use our head sometimes. I like to be passionately supporting whatever it is I'm behind, but sometimes we can't do that. Sometimes we just have to approach it from a strictly analytical, rational position of thinking through if A, you know, then B, and so on and so forth. Anyway. All right, let's go to Missouri, where Barrett is on the line. Barrett, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Hi there. I think my ultimate would probably be everything that everybody said, but to wrap that all up, just somebody that, just protection of our Constitution in general, which wraps that all up into one. And like your previous
That's a novel idea. I have someone who would actually abide by the Constitution.
Correct.
I was being a little sarcastic there. I was being sarcastic. You're right. It does wrap it all up, because if someone would simply abide by the Constitution, guess what? They would do all of the above.
Exactly. And like your previous caller, I'm not too excited about Trump. But I think he seems to have a big problem with pride and ego and some other things. I think somebody just needs to keep his feet in the fire and remind him why he's there. And I think there's a chance you know, at least to get us through the next 4 years without completely destroying it like Hillary would, but.
I agree. I mean, it's just a matter of looking at the, as I said, the options before us. You know, I've had the, Barrett, thanks for the call. And as we all kind of work through this process, I think it's helpful when other people hear how other people have kind of made this transition. And, you know, maybe some folks aren't there, and some folks maybe be voting, may be voting for somebody else. That's fine. They can talk about that here as well. I was talking with somebody about this. I'm going to run out of time, so I probably shouldn't broach that subject because I want to get to this other phone call. I'll have to save that for another day. I was going to talk about my impressions of Donald Trump personally as opposed to what his public persona is. It's much different. But I want to go to Missouri because Luke's been holding on the line. So, Luke, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. So what's motivating you to vote in this election? What issues are up there for you?
Well, for me, I'm seeing all the damage that the Supreme Court has done to conservative values and to staples, common sense things that I believe that our country should uphold, like marriage and like abortion and I was really thrilled to hear about Donald Trump's list of potential Supreme Court nominees.
Right.
And I'm going to vote for Trump because I know that a vote for Trump is not a vote for just Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, explain that. Tell people what you mean by that.
It's a vote for good Supreme Court justices. It's a vote for Mike Pence. It's a vote for, if he's got such a good list of Supreme Court justices, I mean, you got to believe that, you know, the cabinet appointees would be really good too. And I've noticed that Trump seems to be willing to surround himself with smart people. I noticed in some of the debates he was really honest and upfront when he didn't have a lot of knowledge about an issue, but he said, you know, I'll be consulting, you know, the top experts on whatever subject it was.
Yeah, you can't expect somebody to know everything. But and I think that is true about him. He's a quick study, but he also listens, which that's a valued quality in a leader, is actually listen. Because when you listen, you can learn. And I think he has done that in this process. I think he's got a lot more to learn, but he's listening. Luke, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch, as well as everyone else for listening. Hey, let me remind you once again, Values Voter Summit starting Friday. There's still time to get here. I mean, probably couldn't walk here, depending on where you're coming from. Of course, everywhere is within walking distance if you have the time. Now, I just don't know if you got time to get here by Friday. But anyway, until next time, which hopefully will be tomorrow, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where it says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.